tell me, Elizabeth, how and why did you get interested in women on boards of directors?
Well, I've always been inspired and have admired the women in leadership, and that includes people like Emily Card, who passed the Equal Credit Act, and Stephanie Shirley, who founded telecommuting, Grace Hopper, who invented COBOL. And these women really were the first advocates of women in business leadership. But what happened is, about the turn of the century, I began looking out there and I realized, you know, the statistics are telling us that how few women there are in leadership positions, either on corporate boards or in the executive suite. And I kept asking myself, why have we sort of stagnated? And then what can we do now to make a difference today?
You've done research on the women on boards at California-based Fortune 1000 firms for the past 3 years. What does your research tell us?
We've focused on the Fortune 1000 firms pretty much because everybody is looking at the top corporations. But we didn't stop only at the percentage share of women on the boards. We went deeper. We started to look at the proxy information about what is the experience of the 114 women who actually do hold 123 seats on California's 101 top corporate boards. And what we did is we identified that there were typically six different paths into the boardroom. We determined that they include the nonprofit path, the academic path, governmental or political paths, the investment, entrepreneurial, as well as corporate paths. And we started to evaluate in depth the actual experience of these women along these pathways to get a better understanding of how could we advise women themselves to pursue corporate boards of directors.
And did the women get on boards by riding some male mentor coattails?
The women with the longest experience, those that came in from about the 1970s, they were more likely to have been associated with a partner, a spouse, who might have been a corporate founder. But even so, these women made contributions to their corporations that demonstrates that they didn't ride a coattail. They were partners in the process. And one of the best examples includes Marion O. Sandler, who founded Golden West Financial with her husband. It became the most successful, largest savings institution that was recently bought out by Wachovia. And Golden West was the only Fortune 500 firm actually with a majority of women on their boards. Marion Haas, until July of this year, is one of four women on the board of directors of Levi Strauss & Company. Doris Fisher, one of the women on the boards of The Gap. And each of these women founded the company with their husbands and made a major contribution even after their husband passed away or no longer served on the boards.
Is it true that most women came to their board roles by way of the nonprofit route?
Absolutely not. We call this one of the biggest wives' tales out there. Only 8% of the experience mentioned by the women on corporate boards from California mentioned coming by way of the nonprofit route. The nonprofit and the academic routes into the boardroom are about equal. They represent only 1 in 12 of the women who came onto corporate boards.
So what are the prominent paths into the boardroom for today's female director?
For the past 10 years, the corporate path has been the dominant path into the boardroom. It's the most important route to a director's chair. Corporate experience is cited by almost 42% of the women on California Fortune 1000 boards. The overwhelming majority of experience, 88% of all of the experience, includes the corporate path and either an entrepreneurial path or an investment path.
Is the corporate experience of women in the traditional soft positions in human resources, communications, marketing?
No, these are, again, old wives' tales. The corporate experience today, first and foremost, is financial experience. The women are CFOs. Second, they have technology experience. That means chief information officer or chief technology officer. And the third most important part of corporate experience is law, either a partner in their own firm or corporate counsel within the major corporation. The reason that these are critical areas for women on boards is that these are the critical areas of risk exposure for corporations today, and corporations are out there finding the best possible talent.
How prevalent is the political path to a board role, a background in government?
Only about 13% of the experience cited by the women on California boards is from the government or political experience. And even at that, they tended to have some other area of expertise, and then they were appointed to an appropriate commission because of that expertise. There are very few women who made it all the way up the path into an elective government position. Examples of political experience include people like Kathleen Brown, who actually had some investment background and was California state treasurer. She's on the Countrywide Financial Board. Anita Jones is a director at SAIC, and she has computer security background. From an academic perspective, she was appointed to the Department of Defense, heading up their defense research and engineering. Lynette Diley is on the Chevron board of directors. She has extensive corporate banking financial experience, but she was part of the Geneva-Doha trade negotiations. Charlene Barshevsky on the Intel board. She's also a lawyer by training. She was Asian trade negotiations, but her background is entirely in law. Diana Lady Dugan on Qualcomm's board of directors has one of the most impressive collection of experiences in technology and communications, but she too was appointed to be a trade negotiator.
The two other paths that you've identified, entrepreneurship and investment, what can you tell us about them?
These are possibly two of the most important emerging future paths for women to follow into the boardroom today. The first reason is that corporate downsizing and outsourcing is forcing women to create alternative career paths for themselves. Downsizing also fuels the ranks of women-owned businesses, and it makes women realize that they have to take personal responsibility for their own long-term financial investment portfolios. The other side of the market is that women represent a large and growing client base for both of these industries. So when the investment and the entrepreneurial-oriented firms, for-profit firms, want to tap women, they have to have women on their boards in order to understand this marketplace. So both investment and entrepreneurship are areas that we're going to see major increase in the number of women in leadership as well as women on boards.
What is it that women bring to the table? Why do we need women on boards as opposed to simply qualified people, male or female?
There are, in any marketplace, there's 100 people. And if you only tap 50% of the marketplace, then you're bound to find the lemons and the bad apples faster. We just simply need to recognize that men and women constitute 100% of the marketplace. I'm not a believer that women have anything that is uniquely female. What I'm saying is that there is a lot of talent out there in the 50% of the marketplace. It just happens to be of the female gender. If we tap that expertise for our education, why should we not tap that for everything else that we do? Women, I disagree with the argument that we should bring women on board because they're women. We should bring women on board because there's some of the best talent we can find.